Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to the path where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems rather than defend positions. In 2005, journalist and NYU professor Mark Crispin Miller published a book, Fooled Again, that presented compelling evidence that Republicans stole the elections in 2000 and 2004 using hacked voting machines and other nefarious means. While the mainstream press largely ignored the book, the so-called progressive press, including Democracy Now! And Mother Jones, roundly condemned the book and dismissed Miller as a conspiracy theorist. Well, here we are, 15 years later, and the most mainstream of the mainstream Democrats are discussing the prospect of Trump stealing the election and or not abiding by the results if he is defeated. Makes you wonder, had we handled this bullying party then, maybe we wouldn't be dealing with this new word, bully shit, now. Well, fortunately, Donald Trump is so blatantly toxic that everyone has been forewarned and consequently forearmed. Our guest this week, Eleanor LeCaine, recently put out a video we'll be talking more about to help the sane and reverent majority reassert our will should the misleader try any monkey business. Eleanor LeCaine is a longtime political visionary, strategist, and public official. She spent 2019 as policy advisor to the Marianne Williamson campaign and has extensive experience in successfully electing progressives at the federal, state, and local level. In 2016, she was the national director of the She Wins, We Win campaign to elect Democratic women to Congress. And in 2014, she was campaign manager for Marianne Williamson for Congress in Los Angeles. In 2012, she helped Elizabeth Warren win a seat in the U.S. Senate, and she also served as Assistant Secretary of State for the state of Massachusetts. Her book, Breakthrough Solutions, How to Improve Your Life and Change the World by Building on What Works, has an introduction by the Dalai Lama. The book profiles key innovations in areas such as education, etc., etc., etc. Her articles are published widely, and she hosts her own radio show, All Together Now, on PRN Radio. So, can we make the giant Goliath down? What can we do now before the election, and what can we do afterward? That's what we're going to talk about today. Welcome, Eleanor.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's great to be back with you.
Well, you know, we've known each other for a while. I think we met in 2008. And so we've known each other, and I've been aware of your work. But what precipitated this particular interview is the video that you circulated last week, and we'll talk more about that, expressing great concern and sober analysis about the prospects of Donald Trump negating the results of the election. So what? Tell us more about this video and the contents and why you did it.
Right. Well, the video content is about what we should do if Biden wins and Trump refuses to leave office, or if there's confusion around who wins and then Trump tries to hold on to power by whatever nefarious means he might think of. And the reason I did it is because, you know, we've been hearing Trump himself say that when asked, would you accept the results of this election? He said, yes, if I'm the winner. And he's talked blatantly and very publicly about the election, and his view is only legitimate if he, Trump, is the winner. So I had heard that, and kind of, you never know with Trump, like, what is bluster and bluff and what is really a description of his thinking. But then I started putting some things together. I mean, you know, one thing is I read an article by Professor Timothy Snyder from Yale, who's an expert on authoritarianism. And Professor Snyder lays out why we should all take the Trump threat seriously. So that really got my attention. And then I've been tracking the Russian interference in U.S. elections since 2016. And I'm very concerned about the Russian, you know, what they may still do on election day and around that time. And as I was drafting the talking points about why we should take this threat seriously from Trump and the people who are backing him, the FBI exposed the paramilitary threat to kidnap and possibly kill the governor of Michigan. And I thought, you know, this is a real example of some of the people who follow Trump are armed and dangerous, and we need to take it very seriously that Trump is saying this could be a coup in plain sight, and we need to be ready. Now, he may not do that when it comes to it. He may leave quietly, but there's nothing quiet about this guy. And I think every American citizen should be prepared for Trump to refuse to leave office, and we need to know ahead of time what we're going to do if he does that.
You know, this is really quite quite a serious condition. And if you look at his strategies have always been to focus primarily on this hardcore support that he has, and rile them up and make sure that they know that if they are involved in some kind of armed insurrection, he has their back and so on. He's already shown how he operates as kind of a mafia chieftain wannabe by making sure that he pardons the people who are criminals on his watch and that sort of thing. In the video, I watched the video, and by the way, we're going to have a link to that video on your YouTube channel on the Wiki Politiki page when we post this tomorrow. In the video, this is a sober assessment. This is not some kind of a, you know, stuff that the other side does, which is a lot of paranoid, weird stuff. This is real. What are some of the scenarios that you're looking at, and how can we act both preemptively and postemptively to prevent this from happening?
Right. Well, first of all, you're exactly correct. Trump is focused on riling up his hardcore supporters. And that's why one of the things Professor Snyder said was with authoritarians that they're, and Trump in particular, he's not reaching out to swing voters in swing states, which is, if you were trying to win the vote, that's what you would do. You'd try to get the swing voters in swing states. Trump isn't doing that at all. He just keeps throwing red meat to his base and riling them up and getting them all charged up and excited and locked and loaded and standing by. So that is where a light bulb went off for me. When he's not trying to win the election by votes. He's going to just try to stay in power, you know, by hook or by crook, and declare the election fraudulent and not move unless we get him out. So I'm deeply concerned about it, which is why I put together that video. And I think the main thing for all of us is to be aware that this, in fact, could happen, that the current president could lose in the election with, you know, Biden winning the majority votes. He's looking, all the polls are saying he's leading nationwide and he's leading in most of the swing states. So I think we need to be prepared that Biden could win with the votes, but there would be a massive effort to try to declare the votes fraudulent, you know, try to lose some of the votes mailed into the post office, try to declare that some of the votes that were mailed in are not legitimate. And we know this is where the Russians have been kind of, in a way, quiet so far. But we know that in 2016, the Russians interface with all 50 voter databases in all 50 states. And that, by the way, is coming out of the bipartisan Senate committee report, which investigated the Russian involvement in 2016. So, you know, some of the things that might happen, I just think we need to be prepared. I'm not saying these things will happen. I'm saying we need to think ahead of time about what might happen so we're not shocked by it and kind of back on our heels, because if some of these things do happen, we, the people, are going to need to take to the streets, and we're going to need to act quickly and decisively to defend our democracy against a coup in plain sight.
Yeah, and there are some who would say that the coup is already the coup is already happening. This has been an ongoing overstepping of power and overstepping the checks and balances that apparently were put in. And this is something that's alarmed not just Democrats, but there is a transpartisan movement. There's a TIP, Transition Integrity Project, that has laid out this scenario, and there are plenty of Republicans who have not been, quote-unquote, ethically cleansed, who are supporting Biden because they are recognizing the that Trump is not just another Republican candidate, although we could argue that he is what the Republican Party has become. But nonetheless, this is a concern that is very, very broadly held. Before we go into these scenarios, how did we get here? How did we get where we are today? I know that I've always appreciated your deeper political perspective that goes beyond the two-party divide. It's a visionary perspective that looks toward the future and also recognizes that Donald Trump did not just pop out from somebody's rib. You know, it's a phenomenon that it's a well-earned phenomenon. So tell us, what's your perspective on how we got into this, the word that everybody who listens to my show knows, into this situation?
Yeah, well, you're right. We're kind of a long time coming to this place with Trump in office. And, you know, the most immediate background to it is the surprise victory of Trump winning the White House in 2016, which everybody or almost everybody was expecting Hillary Clinton to win. But I think, you know, there were some missteps by Hillary's campaign. There was some support of Trump by the Russians with social media and their interference with hacking into the emails for the Democratic Party and the Clinton campaign. So, you know, there's that kind of that election in 2016 was close enough that the help from the Russians and, you know, 70,000 votes in three states pushed Trump into the winner's circle. So I think, you know, one of the lessons learned from that is we don't want this election to be close enough to steal. We want this to be, not only do we need to beat Trump, we need to bury him. We need to have a massive outpouring of American citizens saying we repudiate everything that you stand for and the way that you've governed, and your undermining of our democratic system. And you mentioned about the Republicans coming out for Biden. There's, you know, just case after case of people standing up and they're saying, you know, this is, we're going to support Biden, not because we're Democrats, we're Republicans, or we've never taken a stand before, but we're supporting Biden as a vote for supporting our democracy. And we know then we can work from there to deal with what we need to. There's huge numbers of people who worked for George W. Bush when he was in office have now come out for Biden. Many, many columnists, lifelong Republicans like George Will, has said, I'm going to vote down the ticket for Democrats this time, and so should you, in order to save the country. So that's kind of the most immediate source of this problem, was the surprise Trump win in 2016 with help from the Russians. Deeper than that is you the problem of why were so many, remember there wasn't a majority, but why were there enough, like 32% to 40% of Americans who were mad enough about their situation that they were vulnerable to a con man who promised that he would fix all their problems for them? And I think that comes as a consequence of 40 years of trickle-down economics, which has left millions of workers out in the cold and very angry, and angry at Republicans and Democrats. And in that situation, people sometimes turn to an authoritarian kind of figure to say, you know, well, maybe he can fix it. And that combined with Trump's playing off of racism, which is a long-term problem, you know, America's original sin with slavery. And you just look through the entire history of the country, dealing with race has been, you know, a major problem all the way through. And that Trump skillfully kind of tapped that vein of racism to turn whites against blacks and against people of color, saying they're getting special advantages and you're getting screwed. So, you know, we need to take this back for white supremacists. And so that's kind of a long-term festering problem, and all of it made worse by Fox News, which is a 24/7 propaganda machine, playing the Trump messages and convincing people that they're being screwed by people of color, blacks, immigrants, and kind of fostering all that mindset that made people receptive to the authoritarian figure that Trump is. So I think that's a little bit of how we got where we're at now.
Okay, good. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Eleanor LeCain talking about this election. Steve Behrman on Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, hi, this is Steve Behrman. I'm back with our guest, Eleanor LeCain. We're talking about the upcoming election, the possibilities of, you know, Trump threatening to call out his brown shirts, if you will. You know, it's interesting. We watched, my wife Trudy and I watched the movie, the documentary about Daryl Davis, who is the black blues musician who has been courting conversations with Ku Klux Klan members for the past 35 years. And he's got a whole bunch of Klan robes in his closet as kind of trophies of people who went, you know what, I don't think this makes sense after all. But one of the things he said, and the movie kind of wraps up with the election of Donald Trump, and he said, not every Trump supporter is a racist, but every racist is a Trump supporter. So in a certain regard, he's been able to aggregate this hardcore support of people who hold a certain ideological viewpoint. And to me, it's kind of paradoxical that people who sometimes call themselves libertarians can be so authoritarian. So I think that we can resign ourselves to this hardcore support that he has. But I'm heartened to think that those people who are on the fringes, who are the people who gave him the benefit of the doubt in 2016, are switching back, recognizing that really what he is such an affront to what this country has become. At the same time, and I want you to comment on this, at the same time, I think that the what the Republican Party has become, you know, if we begin with the Southern strategy that emerged during the Nixon administration, if we look at the Powell memorandum, essentially warning the biggest corporations that regulation is dangerous and they need to do everything in their power to prevent it. The trickle-down economics, Eleanor, that you mentioned earlier, which unfortunately has not been exacerbated by either the Clinton or the Obama administrations, both of which supported the more globalist agenda and did not confront the banks. In fact, they enabled the banks. Bill Clinton was the one who signed the dissolution of the Glass-Steagall Act and so on. So one might say that Donald Trump exemplifies what the Republican Party has been becoming, even though he is anomalous. Any comments on that?
Yeah, I think there is kind of a mindset and an ideology where the corporations have dominated the whole discussion for decades, and Clinton and Obama were, you know, were part of that. And Obama, you know, kind of going back and forth on the transpartisan the TPP agreement, Trans-Pacific agreement. Yeah. You know, so I think you're right. There was this belief that global economic trade was going to lift all people out of poverty, and you know, to a certain extent, they weren't all wrong. If you look globally, there's been an uplifting of a lot of people out of poverty. There's been increased education. There's been decreased starvation and people dying from hunger and malnutrition. So to some extent, there was some truth there. But the reality for the American worker is we kind of got screwed. And a lot of the jobs that were promised did not come through, and a lot of the jobs left. In fact, we're still having the U.S. government subsidize companies moving jobs overseas. It's just absolutely berserk. So and this is the kind of thing, whether people understand the trickle-down economics or this global corporate ideology or not, they're feeling the fact that they've lost their job, that they used to have a high-paying union manufacturing job. It's now gone. And if they have a job, they're working at McDonald's at minimum wage. And whole communities have kind of collapsed. So this is what people live and see, and they're just kind of fed up with the general sentiment of a pox on both their houses. So then along comes Trump saying, I'll fix your problem. I understand. I feel your pain. I'm going to solve it. And at least he is speaking to them. And I think that's what kind of captivated a lot of people. But you're right. A lot of people who did, or at least some people who did vote for Trump in 2016, are aware that he has not delivered the goods. And he might have talked a good game in 2016, but he hasn't delivered anything that's helping them. So he might have made them feel better by attacking immigrants or blacks, but he actually hasn't improved their particular situation. So, the big group in that category is suburban women have really turned against Trump. So I think there's hope that some of them will vote for Biden this time around. And I actually think it's very possible, if all the votes are counted accurately, I think it's very possible we could have a big blue wave. I think it's possible Biden could win big. It's possible the Democrats could take back the Senate. And it's also possible, and very likely, the Democrats will keep a majority in the U.S. House. But my concern is that we're not going to have all those votes counted, and there'll be major effort by Trump and his allies to prevent people from voting and to prevent the votes from being counted accurately.
You know, the Transition Integrity Project, they came up with four possible scenarios. And, of course, the one scenario that is the best-case scenario, as you have suggested, is Biden wins so big that there really isn't any opportunity either for Russian hackers. And by the way, you know, what better way to conquer a country than have it implode from the inside? So Russian hackers or Trumpians can't steal it. But there were three other scenarios. I'm not remembering exactly what they were, but all three of those scenarios involved having people demonstrate in the streets. Now, you know, we saw the big march, the Women's March in 2017. We've seen there was another huge march just recently. We've seen, however, the Black Lives Matter marches and so on in a number of cities have been violent. It's been not just police violence, but violence on the part of people in the demonstrations, perhaps agents provocateurs, that wouldn't be too unusual, plus the armed militia, part of the uncivil whites movement, the armed militia, etc. So how dangerous do you think this is? I mean, if three of the scenarios say people are going to have to be out in the streets, quote unquote, what does that mean? And, you know, given the fact that everybody is wearing masks anyway, supposedly, it could be really even worse than the election itself. Any comments on that?
Yes, I think you're exactly right. Well, just underscoring, the best possible outcome in this election is that there's a clear Biden victory. And I think if we have things like if Biden wins Texas, which has run Republican for many years, but it's also got 38 electoral votes in Texas. If Biden wins Texas, we should know that on November 3rd on the evening. And if that is true, I think it could well be an obvious game over, that even Trump would have a hard time pretending that he won, as it'd be very hard to see a pathway to victory for Trump if Biden wins Texas. So there's, you know, that's our best case scenario. But you're right, there are many scenarios where it's not going to be so clear on November 3rd, election night. It could either be, a narrow victory either way, or it could be it's unclear because it's so close. It's ambiguous about who's winning. And that's where I think the greatest danger will come. And you're right. I've been very concerned. I, of course, support the Black Lives Matter movement, and we need to bring about much greater racial justice in this country. But at the same time, I do not support violence among the demonstrators. And you're right. You know, some of them could be provocateurs. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're planted there. But at the same time, I think that we need to have a clear, unequivocal statement about the people who are pro-Biden that we are committed to nonviolence and we can take to the streets and we'll do it in a nonviolent kind of way. And there's a group that's organized for that called Choose Democracy, and they're actually doing trainings for people now over the internet. And I participated in one the other day. It was run by George Lakey, who's a Quaker professor of Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania. And he is doing two-hour trainings to help people think through some of the specifics of what's going to happen. Because, and I asked George, I said, look, if we go to the streets, if it's an unclear result or Biden wins and Trump is refusing to admit it, we're the nonviolent people. We show up with our masks, and the Trump supporters show up with their machine guns and other weapons. You know, this is a very dangerous kind of situation. So what are we going to do? And George said, well, the first thing is, you know, choose where you go to show your level of, you know, support. Try to not get into a provocative kind of a situation, but be out there, be in the streets, and go with a group. Don't go alone. So I encourage your listeners, Steve, to find five people who, if there's shenanigans going on by Trump refusing to accept the results, or that we go out in the streets with five people and you just flood the streets and shut down the country until we get a full and fair count of every vote that was cast. But I'm making a very strong call for a public and strong commitment to nonviolence as we take these actions.
Absolutely, absolutely, because clearly anything else would be a violation of the basic principles that we're supporting. And again, you just never know in a situation where you have very little control and there could be agents provocateurs or even political radicals on the left. I mean, look at what happened in Seattle when that city was taken over. We still don't know what that was like and what those people were like. And just because people are, quote unquote, oppressed people doesn't make me trust them not to oppress me. So, I think that it's very important for the sane and sacred center that we want to cultivate to have that nonviolence, mutual support. We're all in this together. We're all partnering together as the general principle, because regardless of the election results, that's the general principle that is going to have to eventually win.
Correct. And one of my concerns is people not recognizing that this could well be a coup in plain sight. And people don't think that a coup could actually happen in the United States. But I'm here to tell you, this is a coup in plain sight that could be happening. And we need to be prepared for it. We need to be ready for it. And you're exactly right, too, that we need this commitment to nonviolence to cultivate the center. If you look at coups around the world and which succeed and which don't, the key is which way the center goes. And it can happen very quickly. That's why, if you're back on your heels and wondering what's going on, you know, within a couple of days, this thing could be set. So we need to be ready right away to be hitting the streets. And part of how the people who resist coups succeed is that they practice nonviolence, and that is not only the morally correct position, it's also the practically most effective strategy. Because if you have violence on your side, it's going to push potential supporters away, and then you get into a law and order situation, which plays into the hands of the authoritarian who says, oh, well, there's a big mess out here, law and order problem, I'm going to send in the troops, which we've already seen. Trump is very willing to do that. So we don't want to get into that scenario. We need a very strong commitment to nonviolence.
You know, this is something that in a paradoxical way is strengthening the body politic. in that, you know, our immune system, we've had a weakened immune system. We can look at what happened in 2016 as a weakened immune system, is simply not understanding the kinds of forces that have been building in the Republican Party and in the country to make this kind of a coup possible. And so I think that right now there is a hyper alert, which is very unlike the Democrats. The Democrats have really not wanted, in my opinion, not wanted to look at really the shadow pieces that were emerging and the various evils and evil perpetrations that the bad guys have gotten away with and have chosen to lump those as conspiracy theories. So I think it's very heartening that when you're talking about what you said about the middle, what you said about the center, that it certainly looks as if the center is moving toward deplatforming this guy. It really feels like that's what's happening. And at the same time, all of these defecting Republicans, you have to wonder if indeed they do have a constituency or whether they're like old poor old Jeb Bush, who got deplatformed very early in the 2016 campaign because the Republicans wanted nothing to do with not just neoliberalism, but neoconservatism.
Right, exactly. Well, I hope you're right that people are moving to deplatform him. And by the way, once he's out and if Biden wins and takes office, you know, he's still going to have a platform. I think he's going to be yapping on Twitter and all the rest of his, you know, Fox and all the rest of the news media outlets that are excited to cover him.
So, let him talk. He won't have. Yeah. He won't be in charge of the military. That's right. One of my. You know.
Right. Exactly. This is. We want that. But I do want to point out. Speaking of the military, the Russian military has been active here. And one thing I want to warn your listeners about, in particular, in case they don't see the video that lays out this whole case, but. I think there's a real danger that there could be a Russian attempt to use ransomware against Democratic cities in swing states like Detroit or Philadelphia or Milwaukee, and that I believe the Russian military is behind this. Not only I believe it, yesterday their FBI brought out charges against six Russians who are in Russian military intelligence out of the GRU, and the charge against them is for using ransomware, and it's been done, I don't know if you're aware, ransomware attacks hit the city government in Baltimore and Atlanta last year and kind of shut down the city of Baltimore, and it made it look like they wanted that the people who were hacking wanted money and they wanted the ransom, pay me in Bitcoin. But in actual fact, it was the Russian military intelligence behind that ransomware. And the danger is, I think they were doing that as a trial run to possibly try and use ransomware on election day to interfere with voting systems. So someone might show up to vote and they go, oh, well, you know, either we can't access our system, like the whole city has been shut down, or someone is monkeyed with who's there and who's on the voter databases. Your name isn't there, even though you voted there for 20 years. So I think I'm telling this to you and the listeners so you're not shocked if it happens, and also urge you to go vote early and vote early at a poll if you can, and vote now. It's almost too late to vote by mail. I mean, you really, if you can't vote early by poll, please turn in your vote within the next 24 hours by ballot, because that's going to be through mail. That's going to be the safest way to get it in, because I'm expecting there could be some real monkey business happening around electricity and around ransomware and around voting systems on November 3rd, Election Day.
Oh, we got to take a break. We'll be back shortly after this break with more with Eleanor LeCain talking about this election and beyond.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, hi, this is Steve Behrman. Wow, it's amazing how quickly this hour is passing. I want to reiterate something that you said, Eleanor, and that has to do with securing one's own vote. And then number two, what can we do? What can people do to actually help other people vote? And if they want to do something other than send nasty emails to Trump supporters, which is totally useless, what can people do to actually make sure that the immune cells of the body politic are activated on November 3rd or before?
Well, you're right. The most important thing to do is for each of us to vote early at a poll, if possible, by mail, if necessary. The next thing we can do is work very hard in the next 2 weeks to get the biggest possible vote for the Biden-Harris at the top of the ticket and also congressional Democrats, because the bigger the margin there, then the less likely there'll be a problem after November 3rd. And we want to swamp this guy and just, like, flush him out. So that involves phoning for the Biden-Harris team, or if you've got congressional Democrats running in your area or anywhere, really, you can call nationwide. Just go to the Biden-Harris website. They can hook you up to where to do some phoning. And third, if you've got $5 or more, shoot it over to support key Senate and House candidates who are also running in presidential swing states. So you get a twofer. You support the congressional candidate and the presidential count in that race. And I recommend people go to the Progressive Change Campaign Committee has identified like the top 7 Senate and the top 8 House candidates that are progressives good to back. And fourth, prepare yourself for what to do in case Trump doesn't leave and there's turmoil. And for that, I encourage you to go to the website choosedemocracy.us, not .com, it's .us. And there you can sign a pledge that says, that we're going to vote, we're going to refuse to accept the election results until all the votes are counted. We'll nonviolently take to the streets if a coup is attempted, and if needed, we'll shut down the country to protect our democracy. So I think it's important to sign that pledge as a statement, and there's over 29,000 people have already signed that on choosedemocracy.us. And while you're there, I'd sign up for a training with George Lakey on how to prepare yourself for a possible coup. And they have a wonderful essay there called 10 Things to Know to Stop a Coup. And, it's good. I think the more we're mentally prepared and ready. Like, hopefully we don't need any of this. But if we do, this is all going to break very fast, and we need to be ready.
You know, for the past 3 years, I've been working with a colleague on a project that I'm going to just mention briefly here, because I think it might have something to offer in this emergency situation. Richard Lang, software developer, author of a book called Virtual Country. His company is Democrasoft Collaboration Software, who's had this dream for 25 years to give every American a voice and a vote, an advisory vote, independent from the system, so that we would have an accurate idea of how Americans really feel about things, particularly those issues that get twisted by the public opinion polls and the issues that most Americans agree on, like there should be less money in politics, for example, that the two political parties have shied away from. So given the current condition, Richard and his associates have really amped up the development of a platform, which we'd be calling advisoryvoting.us, where every American voter will have a secure as their bank card, voting module for themselves to be able to voice their vote on any particular issue. And it seems that with these votes being verifiable, matched to the voting rolls in every state, which we're able to do, this could serve as something that really ceased to exist a number of years ago, and that is accurate exit polling. So Richard says that with a small infusion of cash, relatively small, his engineers ready to work, they could have a module that could scale up to 200 million Americans by the time we have inauguration day. And people going on there, there's no risk, we're not collecting anybody's information. It's not it's not a commercial site, non-corporate, non-governmental, non-political, non-partisan. There could pretty quickly be a way to see whether indeed in some of these districts there have been some anomalies. And in a certain regard, we're calling this Freedom of Assembly 3.0 that might, in a sense, override even being out in the streets. Any, I'm springing a new idea on you. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's great to be developing techniques like that for down the road. I would say for this election, it's probably not going to make any difference. I think a new poll technology won't have enough credibility if it's kind of released now to have an impact on this election, particularly where there's so much fake news flowing. And then you get the Russians going, people don't know who to trust. So I think for this election, it's probably not going to have much, if any, impact. But, I think exit polling in general has shown to be pretty reliable. And in fact, I found it interesting when there was the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine, U.S. Republican senators were saying, well, we should look at the exit polls, and that shows, clearly who won the presidential race in the Ukraine. And yet they were unwilling to acknowledge what the exit polls were showing in 2016. So I think it might have been the exit polls were right, but the data might have been monkeyed with.
I think so, yes. So anyway. Yes.
I would go with exit polling and see what that is telling us. And I wouldn't wait. I think, waiting to see what another new technology might tell us. No, I think time will be of the essence. If Trump tries to steal this election, we need to be in the streets within hours, not days.
Yes, I agree that's something that's going to have to happen rather quickly. I want to talk about something else, and you were Marianne Williamson's key platform writer and policy advisor during the 2019 campaign. So many people that I talked with who I sent to look at that platform, they went, wow, it's so comprehensive. It's so specific. It's so wise. What's your sense of how we can build this new sensibility, which to a certain degree is not really represented by either political party? You know, Marianne Williamson made this statement, you know, as we're talking about universal health care, why don't we look at what it is that's actually creating these diseases? And nobody wanted, people cheered because they could sense that there was a possibility of some unrevealed truth coming out that they kind of sensed was true. But in the future, I think that there's going to have to be a true, literal grassroots campaign to actually confront corporate America in a way that the Democratic Party, as it's been constituted, has not been able to do that. What's your sense of this future movement that's going to happen whether we, regardless of who wins the election? I think it's easier, of course, if we're on the inside of the tent pissing out, as LBJ used to say. What's your sense of how what Marianne started can develop over the next decade or sooner?
Yeah, I think that Marianne was the first 21st century candidate for the United States. I think, you know, bringing together a holistic, compelling vision of looking at root causes, looking honestly at the influence of big money and corporations and how that's distorted our policymaking in every arena, and what else we could do, the positive visions of what's possible. I think that that is really where we need to head. And I expect she was the first to be that outspoken and with that program, but she won't be the last. And I'm actually writing a book right now based on some of the policies and programs that I was advising her on and other candidates over the years. And I'm hoping that that's going to be like a handbook for a whole host of candidates to be running on that. And you're right. I mean, the whole healthcare debate had gotten stuck in fighting over how we pay for healthcare. And nobody had been talking about what are the root causes, like why are so many people sick? It is now the common situation where over half of our people have a major illness like, you know, cancer, heart disease, or diabetes. And it's more natural or more common to be sick than it is to be healthy. And that's wrong. And we need to be looking at what are those root causes? Why are so many people getting sick? And how do we do that? And I'm going to be writing about that in my healthcare chapter in my book. It's going to be something like Creating an America That Works for Everyone. So I'm hoping that Marianne was the first but not the last, and we'll have many candidates bringing out these kinds of ideas. And I think they'll take root, some of them within the Democratic Party. I mean, we've got a lot of great Democrats right now. We have Elizabeth Warren, we have Bernie Sanders, we have Sherrod Brown in Ohio. There's some really great people there, and there's room within the party for that kind of perspective and policy positions. And I think we need an independent movement, not a third party. I am dead set against a third party, but a movement to build support for this kind of vision and program.
I've said that we don't need a new third party in this country. We need a new first party, you know. And right now, we could say, again, so many jokes are not funny. We could say that we have two parties in this country. We have the Democratic Party and the Undemocratic Party.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that I'm sure you're familiar with Thomas Frank, you know, What's the Matter with Kansas? And what Thomas Frank said, and he's been saying this for years, kind of like a voice in the bewilderness, that the Democratic Party has become the party of the technocracy and the technical elites, rather than what it used to be. I mean, there's not hardly a vestige of New Deal Democrats left. But it used to be the party. Of course, there's hardly, you know, unionization has diminished and so on. Before we sign off, which has to be very soon, what's one thing that you find particularly encouraging right now?
I think the fact that so many Republicans are turning against Trump and publicly denouncing him and saying so publicly. And that's another thing, by the way, I think which I hope Trump is soundly defeated along with his Republican enablers in the Senate. I hope they all get swept out in a big blue wave. The Republican Party itself is going to need to reconstitute itself. So I think it's a very fluid time, and it's time to be staying clear about what our vision is, who do we want to be as a people, what do we want to achieve, and work towards that and not get too caught up in party label.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Eleanor LeCain. And I think that's a great way to end. We need to focus on the prize. Look to the future and the kind of future that we want to create. I'm glad we're teammates, and I look forward to seeing your book when it comes out.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you, Eleanor LeCain, for being our guest on WikiPolitiki. We'll be back. We'll have all of your information up on our Wiki site, including a link to the video and these organizations that will help get out to vote and get people out after the vote. Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki, will be back with you next week.